Hi, Giannis.
Hi, Robert.
How you doing?
I'm very, very well.
Good.
All things considered, of course.
All things considering circumstances in Greece. Let me introduce this. You're Giannis Varoufakis, I think, something like that.
Yes.
Professor of Economics at the University of Athens, although you're going to actually be moving to America next year in the fall. And we are going to talk about the upcoming Greek elections. That's on, Sunday? Is it the Greek runoff?
Yes.
For people who may not recall, there was an earlier Greek election, but it was not conclusive, or at least they were unable to form a government in the wake of the election. And so now they're having another one. And this is being generally viewed as a referendum on the euro, among other things. I'm not sure whether it is or not, but one of the parties is very much opposed to the austerity conditions that have been associated with continued participation in the eurozone, right?
Not exactly.
Okay.
So
what is right?
Let's start.
Okay.
It's not a referendum, an effective referendum for the euro, because if that were the case, it wouldn't be a cliffhanger, simply because 80% of Greeks, you know, that's what opinion polls tell us,
right.
And it's also the feeling that I have on the ground, are in favor of remaining in the eurozone. Only 20% have a tentative view that we should get out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not the issue. It's not the point of contention. The point of contention concerns the terms and conditions of the loans,
mm-hmm.
the loan agreement between Greece and the Troika. The Troika consists of the European Union, the European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund.
Mm-hmm.
In May 2010, the Greek state effectively became bankrupt, could not pay its bills. So we have, since then, we've had three separate loan agreements. The largest loan in economic history, globally. The first chunk was 110 billion euros, which is something equivalent to $150 billion. And the second one was even more. Now, the problem with these loans is that, they come with strings attached.
Mm-hmm.
And the trouble with those strings is that the terms and conditions that are imposing upon the Greek state are impossible. So it is effectively like losing your job or go part-time, not being able to meet your mortgage repayments, and somebody coming along and giving you a credit card, which allows you to draw money from for a year or two to repay, to meet your monthly mortgage repayments,
mm-hmm.
a large interest rate. And imagine if that happened on condition that you reduce your income further, because this is what the austerity provisions are. It means that your bankruptcy has been averted on paper for a year or so, but it becomes much deeper, and you find yourself in a much, much deeper hole from which there is no chance of getting out. So this election is about renegotiating that.
And one of the two parties...
How to do this.
Right, and one of the two parties, it's spelled S-Y-R-I-Z-A or something, is particularly opposed to the austerity conditions that have been associated with the loans. And I think it's true that, although this isn't technically a referendum, and you're saying it isn't even a de facto referendum, it is being viewed in some European circles as that, right? In other words, there are some people who are saying that if this party wins, it ultimately means that Greece drops out of the euro. People are saying that, right, even if they're wrong.
But they are profoundly wrong, either because they're fooling others or because they're fooling themselves. This is not the issue. This Syriza is the radical left party, let's call them that.
Okay.
The radical left party, if you look at their manifesto, the first thing they say is, we want Greece to stay in the eurozone. And secondly, the only way we can stay in the eurozone without drowning
mm-hmm.
is if we have a meaningful renegotiation of the terms and conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So that is not saying we want to get out of the eurozone. It's saying the difference between them and the establishment parties, the conservatives and the socialists who managed this mess for the last 2 years, concerns the way in which we will renegotiate. There's no political power force party in Greece now which says that we shouldn't renegotiate. So both the pro-bailout parties, that's how the international press refers to the conservatives and the socialists, as pro-bailout parties,
mm-hmm.
which is not exactly right, correct, but nevertheless, let's call them that for argument's sake. They say that we will win the election. If we win the election, we will go to Brussels, to Berlin, to Frankfurt, and we will say to them, please, 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 let's change those crippling terms and conditions, they're killing us. What the radical left party is saying is, if you go to a negotiation without being able to envision, to imagine, the possibility of saying no to that that the other side is going to offer you,
mm-hmm.
might as well not go. So you have a credible threat.
Okay, so the so-called radical left party is saying there are circumstances under which we would be willing to contemplate leaving the euro. If nothing else, but you're saying they feel they need to be able to say that if only for negotiating purposes,
no,
is that right?
No, this is not what they're saying. Let me tell you what the negotiating card is. The negotiating card is not either, you know, we have a deal that is workable, or we get out of the euro.
Right.
No. The radical left party, and I played, the reason why I'm quite passionate in explaining this, because I played some role in convincing them to adopt this.
Oh, I see. So this is the Giannis plan.
It's not the Giannis plan. It's the Giannis
strategy.
Strategy, if you want. Yes.
Okay. Excellent.
It's very simple. Look, let me narrate it in the best possible way. 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. the Greek state, under this bailout scheme,
mm-hmm.
borrowed 4.2 billion euros from one arm of the European Union, the bailout fund, the EFSF. And do you know what we did with that money? We gave it all to the European Central Bank, to another arm of the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
This was piled up on top of the Greek public debt. You know, it was piled on the shoulders of a state that is struggling to keep its nose above water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It simply made the insolvency of the Greek state worse. This is not sustainable. So that in August, we're supposed to get another chunk of the loan, again to give it to the European Central Bank, mm-hmm. again not being able to utilize it in order to invigorate the Greek economy, to pay for health, education, for anything. So we have a bankrupt Greek state, mm-hmm. which keeps borrowing money from one arm of the European Union to give it another.
So, what they're really doing is just extending the repayment. They're just pushing the repayment off, right? That's what's really happening.
Yes, but in meanwhile, there are two things. Firstly, you're increasing the public debt in the short run,
right?
Which makes our insolvency and our capacity to borrow, the state's capacity to borrow, much, much worse. Uh-huh. And secondly, the condition for getting the August installment is a further reduction in the minimum pensions and minimum wages, which has catastrophic deflationary effects on a crumbling economy. So my suggestion is to Syriza, to the radical left party, and I think they have adopted it. It's very, 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 very simple. Don't threaten the Europeans with an exodus from the euro. Simply say, guys, I'm not going to take the next installment. That's it. And sit down. So, say nothing more about it.
So, but is that tantamount to saying I'm willing to default on the loan? Is that what that is, saying we default?
Indeed. It means that, you know, I'm supposed to be giving 3.8 billion whatever to the ECB on the 16th of August. I'm making this up now. I'm not sure what the date in August is. Okay? And I'm not going to give it back. I can't pay it and I won't pay it.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, look, Greece has defaulted already. In March, we defaulted. And that was an official default. Even the CTSs were triggered. Hmm. So there's nothing new here. This is a bankrupt state. And it's also unique in history in the sense that we had a major default. In terms of net present value, our creditors in March lost 80%, almost 78%. That's Argentina-like. And yet we don't call this a default. We call it a PSI because we like euphemisms in Europe. Okay? And but it's a unique case in human history, in economic history, because we defaulted in March, and yet we still have an unsustainable debt. That takes some doing.
So what's happening, I mean, the Europeans then, when they say this is a referendum on the euro, at least some of them, what they're saying is, look, if you refuse to repay your loans, if that party wins and you just refuse to repay, then we are not going to let you stay in the euro. I mean, are some people saying that? And is that possibly just their own negotiating position?
Indeed, that's all there is to it. But it's a non-credible negotiating position. It's like me telling my daughter that if she doesn't do her homework, I'm going to stop breathing until I die.
So it's a message to the Greek voters. A message to the Greek voters. They're saying, do not vote for Syriza.
Exactly. But look, this is exactly what happened in Ireland only the other day. The proud Irish people voted for an idiotic fiscal pact that makes absolutely no sense. It's complete and utter nonsense. It's not even worth the paper it was written on. Every Irish man and woman knew that that fiscal pact was an idiocy, a complete and utter idiocy. Every political party effectively sort of let it be known that they know that it's an idiotic pact. Mm-hmm. But every political party, except Sinn Féin, said, look, guys, let's vote for this, because if we don't, they are threatening us with a cessation of loans from the Troika. Mm-hmm. So the Irish people either stayed away, didn't vote, only 50% of them voted, very, very low turnout, and the ones who did voted 60% in favor because they were not prepared to jeopardize the next loan installment. Mm-hmm. So it has worked in Ireland, and they're trying to make this work in Greece by terrorizing Greek people, saying that unless you vote for the parties we want you to vote for, you'll be thrown out of the euro. But this is a non-credible threat, because if they throw Greece out of the euro will be history within a few weeks. Mm-hmm.
So what does Syriza want? They would like for the debt to continue to be extended, except for the austerity conditions to be relaxed. Is that it? Or they would like actual debt relief plus a relaxation of the austerity conditions, or what?
Three main things, primarily. The first thing is that, yes, that there is a moratorium on repayments to the official sector, effectively to the ECB. That, you know, it's ridiculous to ask us to take money from one hand of yours and give it to the other hand of yours when this is unsustainable. So let's just put this on hold and try to restart growth, or at least to stop the freefall. Remember, Greece is shrinking at -7% every year. This year, last year, the year before that, next year. Now, that's not, it doesn't matter how hard you flog a dead horse, it won't go faster. So you have to revive it. So the first thing we need is a moratorium of repayments, not a cancellation of the debt, but a moratorium. The second thing you need is massive investment. There has to be an investment spree in Greece now, if we're going to keep Greece within the euro, if we're going to keep the euro. And that can be affected through the European Investment Bank. The European Investment Bank is perfectly capable of starting this private sector projects. I'm not suggesting they should give money to the Greek state. I wouldn't want to see the Greek state receiving anything from Europe. But they can be very important. There are already plans, business plans, by the European Investment Bank. And, of course, we wouldn't expect this only to apply to Greece. It should apply also to Portugal. It should apply to Ireland. It should apply to Europe's in recession, especially the peripheries in a savage recession. And the third thing that Syriza should be arguing in favor of is a complete change in the banking system. That is, at the moment, we have this silliness of the insolvent Greek and Spanish and Irish states borrowing money from the Europeans to give to the banks, when they cannot borrow anyway, because they are insolvent themselves. Mm-hmm. So since the European EFSF, the bailout fund, is providing this money to the banks to refloat them, to recapitalize them, well, we might as well turn the EFSF into a US-style TARP and have the EFSF recapitalize the banks directly without going to the national government and without inflating the national debt. Okay. These three things.
So what Syriza needs to do, I guess, is convince the Greek voters that these Europeans who are threatening to expel Greece from the euro in the event that it rejects the austerity conditions that they are bluffing, right? I mean, Syriza needs to convince the Greek voters of that, that they are not, in fact, that ultimately the Europeans would have to swallow this deal.
That's right, and it's not easy. And one reason why it's not easy is because some Europeans, some of the people in the corridors of power, are not bluffing. They are just magnificent fools. They are perfectly capable of, you know, wrecking the whole of the continent on a whim. I mean, just look at them, the way that they have been reacting in the last 2 years. Such a monumental denial of economic reality. I have been talking to, you know, chief economists of major banks in Frankfurt, mm-hmm. and I'm extremely worried by what I hear. I hear them say things like, well, we will get rid of Greece and Portugal and Spain from the euro. We will sever them and then amputate those limbs and then cauterize through massive LPRO, that is QE, European style. Mm-hmm. And anyway, if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter because we'll go back to the Deutschmark and we'll be fine because it will be a capital flight into Germany. Mm-hmm. And that kind of loose talk is the result of desperation mm-hmm. by people who are in denial about the fact that the Eurozone simply did not prove capable of sustaining the great disaster of 2008. Mm-hmm. And they're not prepared to rationally plan it and to redesign it in such a way as to make it work.
Mm-hmm. Now, what does it look like is going to happen in the election this Sunday? I know there's been a blackout. In Greece, there's a blackout on polling, on yes. releasing polling results beyond a certain point. So there are going to be no polls very close to the election. But what do you think is going to happen?
The radical left people, because I talked to them, are very confident they will win. I'm into minds. I think that the whole thing will be on the in the balance up until the moment when voters enter the polling booths. Mm-hmm. I think that right there at the polling booths, they are going to be torn between two equally powerful forces. One force will be telling them that the radical left people are right, that we have to negotiate, and we have to be able to provide an alternative to that which is offered by the Troika. Mm-hmm. And then there is another force pulling them the other way, saying, yes, but what if the Europeans are forced, either for psychological reasons or because of their own political experiences, to chuck us out of the euro. And even if this means that they will be hurting themselves, we Greeks are going to suffer first. So is this the time to be the recalcitrant? So there are these opposing forces. I don't know how they will bear upon, you know, the swing voters. And I don't think anyone does. So it will be a nail-biting count on Sunday night.
And the main alternative is a Conservative Party? I gather.
Yes.
Which last time was in coalition with the Socialists. But of those two, it's the Conservative Party that is the dominant rival.
Yeah, the thing to understand is that following the economic catastrophe of the last 2 years, the political scenery in Greece imploded. So you have the economy imploding and you have the political scenery imploding. Mm-hmm. In Greece, we had, like in America, you have the Republicans and the Democrats. We had the Conservatives and the Socialists. Amongst them, between themselves, they had anything between 80 and 90% of the votes. So we had a two-party system, extremely powerful two-party system. In 2009, the Socialists won 45% of the vote. Now they are struggling at around 10%. Mm-hmm. They were the ones who managed the catastrophe. So they were the ones that were wiped out. The Conservatives, instead of picking up support, they had a historic low by their standards of 32% in 2009. And in the May election, they went under 20. But of course, they had more votes than the Socialists, courtesy of the fact that for at least 2 years they were not in power. Uh-huh. So both establishment parties collapsed. But the Conservatives collapsed less than those who were in government, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. So the little radical left party, a pipsqueak of a party that nobody paid much attention to, and it was struggling to survive for decades. Survival meant get the 3% vote that is necessary to enter parliament, mm-hmm. so it's around 4%, 4.5%, on a good day, 5%. Suddenly we're elevated to near 20%, and now they're pushing towards 30%. Mm-hmm. So suddenly, you know, the West nightmare has materialized. They've become a party of government.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and as for the Conservatives, I assume that they are... I mean, they're associated with the austerity conditions, but I assume what they're saying is that if elected, they will renegotiate less severe terms or in the future negotiate less severe terms. Is that what they're claiming?
Yes, but they have two major problems in terms of credibility with voters. The first one is that they were at the helm when effectively they set the Titanic on a course of collision with the iceberg, because it was a new democracy conservative government that was in power between 2004 and 2009, which is when all the excesses took place, which ensured that this was the first dominant fall. So, every Greek, including New Democracy supporters, know that it was their government that was responsible for the fact that Greece was the first one to fall. So that doesn't do them much good. Now, they have a new leader, and the new leader was doing reasonably well during the trials and tribulations of the crisis when the Socialists were in the government, because he was saying no to the austerity measures. The austerity measures are simply going to make, they're going to be self-defeating, a kind of Keynesian argument, mm-hmm. that, you know, the deflation that they are going to occasion is going to reduce the capacity of the Greek state to repay its loans, so it's silliness. And we were saying more or less the same thing. But when we reached a critical point in November, when George Papandreou, the Socialist Prime Minister, effectively was pushed out, mm-hmm. It was a combination of his own mistakes and loss of credibility with the voters and the fact that Merkel and Sarkozy had enough with him, So he was pushed out, and the opposition, which up until that point was against the austerity measures, was effectively told by conservative parties, its sister or brother parties, whatever however you want to call them, in Europe, mm-hmm. you better get into coalition with the socialists, otherwise we will stop the loans coming Athens' way. At that point, Mr. Samaras, the leader of the opposition, buckled and signed on the dotted line of the austerity measures that he was lambasting for a year and a half. So that was the second credibility loss of the, okay. of the conservatives. Now he's telling us, is, I did it because I had no alternative. Give me a vote of confidence. Give me a mandate, and I'll go and negotiate. Mm-hmm. But how are you going to negotiate this time around when in November you didn't? Unless you have some credible threat, mm-hmm. then you will buckle again. I mean, you buckled in November. Why won't you buckle now?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So are all the parties that participated in the last election participating in this again, or is it a classic kind of runoff election where only the leading parties?
It's not a runoff election. It's not like a second round.
Right. So it's all the parties.
It's another proper, fully-fledged election, the result of the failure of the previous parliament to form a government.
Okay.
So everybody's still running, with the exception of some fringe parties, small parties, that didn't do at all well mm-hmm. in the last election, and they have joined some of the larger parties.
So does that make it more likely that after the election we will see a coalition form this time?
Yes, I think so. Okay. I think so. Because don't forget that in the May election, as I said before, the political system imploded. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of dust. It was very difficult to see through the dust. Now the dust will settle quite a lot. Mm-hmm. So if let me put it this way. If the New Democracy Conservative Party come top, they will form a government, most probably with the socialists. The armed socialists, whatever is left of the socialist party. Mm-hmm. If Syriza get elected, it's more likely than not that the socialists will want to form a government with them.
Oh, so the socialists will go either way, you think?
One doesn't know, but that's my hunch.
Okay. And what about the so-called neo-Nazi party? What is it, Golden Dawn or Rising Dawn or something?
Golden.
For the first time, they won enough votes to actually sit in parliament last time around. Is it clear whether or not they will again gain that status this time around?
Well, the only good news, the only silver lining I have is that since the last election, they've been exposed a little bit to the light. So like all forces of darkness, mm-hmm. Dislike light, and that light has not done them much good. So they have appeared on television a little bit more than they were before. Up until the last election, they were excluded. We have seen their thuggish face, and hopefully that will restrict the number of people who vote for them. But I very much fear that they will again secure a disgustingly high percentage. They got 7% last time. They probably get 5-6 this time. It's far too much. I feel deeply, deeply ashamed to be a Greek, given that we have such a party of thugs in parliament. They're not even neo-Nazis, they're just Nazis. They're anti-Semitic, anti-gay, anti-human, means that they hate themselves. They're just the scum of the earth that have surfaced as a result of the political and economic implosion. It's the 1930s all over again.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of them being exposed to the light of day, there was the one scene I saw where someone from that party was on a TV show. He threw water on one woman who had insulted him and then started slapping another woman who reprimanded him for that. Yeah. I would think that wouldn't play well, but you know, when things are bad enough in a country, when there's really a sense of siege and panic, that kind of thing actually can play well to a certain constituency, right? I mean, how did to a small constituency, but that can happen. How did that play in Greece?
I don't think it did him any good. I don't think it helped them. Uh-huh. The two women you mentioned, by the way, are members of parliament. One was a member of parliament for the Radical Left Party, and the other one is an old hack journalist, a very well-known journalist from years back, who used to be a conservative, and I said, well, voila, she's been a Communist Party member of parliament. Mm-hmm. She's a very well-known and appreciated, to a large extent, journalist. Mm-hmm. The woman that you said insulted the Nazi, that didn't actually insult him. She actually mentioned the fact that there is a pending court case against him. Mm-hmm. And upon hearing that, he grabbed a glass of water and threw it at her. Mm-hmm. And the other woman, Liana Canelli, the Communist Party journalist, member of parliament, objected. And then he got up and actually slapped her, what, 6-7 times? Mm-hmm. Quite hard.
Something like that.
So that just gives you, this is the serpent's egg. Hatching.
And what about the scene on the night of the election when the leader of the party, I don't know if you saw this, was coming in to speak to the press, and he was preceded by somebody who demanded that all of the journalists stand up before the guy walked into
the room. I'm telling you, they're not neo-Nazis, they're Nazis.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that seemed
as creepy to Greeks as it seemed to us.
I tell you what should really energize the consciences of people around the world, especially in Europe. On that night, if you recall, and he said that in English, so you can actually see it yourself, it's on YouTube, he said, Greece is first, the rest of Europe and the world will follow. So beware, he warned us. Now, hopefully, history will repeat itself as fast, as Marx said once, and we will not have to worry about it. But look, Robert, my great worry about these people is not so much that they will grab power. Of course, you know, the early 1930s should cast doubt on what I'm saying. But nevertheless, I don't believe they will grab power. But they're already in power, and that is what horrifies me. And let me explain what I'm saying. When a party like that appears, makes it to parliament, and has 20 members of parliament in 300. That's quite a lot of power. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks before the general election in May, a socialist party minister of public order, of the police minister, ordered crack units of the Greek police to apprehend prostitutes in the streets of Athens, most of them migrant women, subject them against their wishes to HIV testing, and post on the internet their photographs if they turned out to be positive. Mm. Now, the only reason why he did that, the socialist minister of public order, was in order to show to his electorate, he was facing the electorate 2 weeks after that, that he's tough on migrants and that they don't need to vote for the fascists, they have him. Mm-hmm. He's also a nice guy, but he's not really a fascist. Now, if fascists can influence the agenda and cause basic human rights to be violated in this manner before they come to power, well, they don't have to come to power.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little about the conditions that have given rise to this. I mean, the economic conditions, the social conditions. You know, I've seen phrases like social collapse in the newspaper applied to Greece. How bad are things in economic and social terms?
Think grapes of wrath. Think dust bowls. Think a complete implosion. This is not a recession. A recession can have a redemptive effect, weeding out, you know, the inefficient firms, causing structural changes in the labor market, ensuring that people who are doing jobs that are no longer necessary in the global order of things are no longer doing it, and then they are forced to do something else which is more useful. Yeah. That's a recession. That's putting a nice spin on the recession. What's the difference with a complete implosion and a depression? I'll give you a very simple answer to this question. You have a depression when everybody goes bankrupt, including the efficient. And I keep giving an example, which I think is poignant, that's why I keep returning to it, of a friend of mine, an acquaintance of mine, has a factory in Greece, small factory, by Greek standards not so small, but by international standards small, which is profitable. It has been profitable for the last 15 years, and has not even been touched by the Greek crisis, simply because it exports everything that it produces. So this is a rare Greek company, which is, you would have expected, is the source of hope for an economy like this. Well, they're going bankrupt. Mm-hmm. They have a full order book, and they're profitable. How come they're going bankrupt? It's very simple. Because the foreign suppliers, the suppliers of this company, of raw materials, will no longer accept the checks issued by this company to buy raw materials from them.
Actual checks? It's not credit, it's actual checks?
The credit guarantees by the Greek bank, by the Greek bankers of that firm, because nobody in Europe now trusts Greek banks. Mm-hmm. They will simply not accept the checks or credit guarantees or call them whatever you want. So this businessman friend of mine has to use his own, he's got a bank account in London somewhere with private funds in order to buy raw materials. Now, his private funds are not enough to keep his factory stocked properly. So input is restricted, output is restricted, he's going under.
So just the ordinary liquidity that underlies the functioning of an economy has broken down.
Right. Internally, all circuits of credit have completely collapsed. There used to be a quaint system in Greece where wholesalers would provide shops and outlets with produce on credit, sometimes credit to the form of post-dated checks or that kind of arrangement. Now this circuit of credit is completely broken down. Let me give you an example that you as an academic will understand. Last summer, I published a book in Greece, which turned out to be the number one bestseller in the summer because it was about the crisis and everybody...
Congratulations.
Well, yes, thank you. Well,
not about the crisis, but about the book.
Yes. I'm not saying this in order to seem self-important. I'm telling you because there's an interesting economic story to this. I'm going to get a fraction of my royalties, if any. The reason is that my publisher is going broke simply because the bookshops, even though they've sold the book, are not giving my publisher the money that they receive. And the reason is that the bookshops are going broke. And so they have to use whatever money they get from selling books in order to pay the taxman and these huge hikes in taxes, the increases in electricity bills, all those austerity measure induced cost rises. Mm-hmm. The publisher is not getting the money, even though the books are selling. I'm not getting the money from the publisher, and everybody's going broke. So this is simply an example of what I mean by a depression, a situation where you've got a complete wholesale implosion, collapse, catastrophe, which is not redemptive. There's nothing redemptive in this.
And what is the unemployment rate now?
Officially, it's climbed to 23%, I think. But if you look at youth unemployment, it's climbing to 56%.
And these are the potential recruits for the neo-Nazi party, I assume, young unemployed men.
Indeed.
Who blame immigrants, among other things. They blame Jews and immigrants for their problems, basically?
It's typical scapegoating. When people are down and out, and they're angry, and it is impossible to be angry with the world at large. There has to be a need, there's a psychological need, either to explain to them exactly what's happening, but that's complicated, or the easiest way out, especially by demagogues, is to say, it's him. Mm-hmm. It's the left hookers, the people who use their left hands to write, or it's the people with a differently colored skin, or the ones who are of a Jewish disposition. anti-Semitism is extremely right in Greece at the moment, but not so strong as the anti-immigrant, right? Because the immigrants are amongst us. Mm-hmm. And there is a problem with Greece too, because we have the only land border with Asia, with Turkey, and that's an easy crossing. So all the dispossessed of the world who want to make it to Italy, to France, to England, they walk across the border. They get bottled up in Greece, because once they're there, they cannot move further. Mm-hmm. And Greece is becoming a warehouse of misery, both of Greeks and non-Greeks alike. So it's quite easy for the serpent's egg to hatch in such an environment.
Okay. Now, finally, what about people who say, and I'm sure there are probably people in Germany and elsewhere in Europe who say this, who say, look, Greece brought their troubles on themselves, right? I mean, going back years, they weren't doing a good enough job of collecting taxes and so on, spending more than they had. I'm sure you've heard this. What's the reply?
Greece is replete with a number of malignancies. The worst of them all is tax immunity. I don't call it tax evasion, I call it tax immunity. The rich in particular have always managed to secure tax immunity for themselves, as they do almost everywhere. It's just that in Greece, because we've had many years of occupation by the Turks, by the Germans, the local dictatorship, the poor have seen it as a patriotic duty to evade the tax office as a form of resistance. So we've had that problem. There was always some petty corruption in Greece. I don't think corruption is as great as it is made out to be, but it's petty. It's not great in aggregate terms, but it's annoying and it's everywhere to see. Mm-hmm. And we have, effectively, the greatest trouble we have is that the mini-industrial revolution, which was occasioned by the Marshall Plan in the 1950s, collapsed in a pile in the 1970s as a result of the combination of the oil crisis and the opening up of the Greek economy in order to enter Europe. So the removal of protection, together with the vast increase in energy prices, destroyed Greek industry. There was a very impressive Greek industry that emerged in the 50s and 60s, and that all went. And they turned into warehouses selling to Greeks imported German goods, primarily. So that created a structural problem in the Greek economy. You add all the malignancies, which are related to that, because when the industry goes, it's very difficult to have a modern state when industry is receding. Mm-hmm. So all these are excellent reasons why Greece was the first domino to fall. They do not explain the domino effect, and they don't explain the fact that Greece cannot rebound, because Greece always had these problems. The question is, why are we in this state now? The answer is because we're part of a monetary system which is extremely rigid, which is ill-designed, and which is crumbling. And of course, the weakest members of that arrangement, Greece, Portugal, are suffering the most. And they cannot find any shock absorbers within their social economy by which to absorb the shock and move on. Mm-hmm. Turn the page.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for this. This has been an excellent briefing. And we will we'll see what happens on Sunday.
We will indeed.
And then we will, the next year when you'll be based in the United States, we'll see you, I guess, maybe there. You'll be at the University of Texas, right?
That is correct.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much, Yiannis.
Thank you, Robert.
Okay. Bye-bye.